May 18th, 2017. Gotta say, I didn't think I was, you know, ever gonna be doing this podcast. It's just insane. What happened? I mean, I don't know what happened, but I know last night I was getting ready to interview Nikki Sixx, so I stayed home. I took the night off. I wanted to really get a lot of good questions together for the podcast, and I went to bed early, like at 11, which is super unusual for me. And you know, so I woke up at like 6:30, and which, by the way, you know, you take it for granted that you're just going to go to sleep and wake up the next day, you know, or you're going to wake up and everything's just going to be great and everything's going to roll. And, you know, and sometimes you wake up and shit's just, you know, you got to deal. And, you know, I woke up and there was like 14 texts, and right away, that's like completely unusual. 14 texts at 6:30 in the morning. And there it is. Chris Cornell gone. I mean, you know, we've lost a lot of rock stars, but a lot of them were older, and, you know, they've lived a long life, a long, hard life. And you know, and that happens, but like, you know, when you lose somebody at 52 and then possible suicide, you just can't take in, you know. I mean, I just don't know. Like, wow. I just saw this guy, you know, in November, Temple of the Dog. It was one of the, and I say it a lot, but I mean this with all heart, man. It was one of the most epic shows I've ever seen. And, you know, first of all, I saw Temple of the Dog years ago. One of the few people ever to see it at a RIP party. And I didn't think I'd ever get to see it again. So to see that man and the work they had put in, I did a whole podcast on it. It was so fucking moving that a band at those guys' age would care so much to put together a 3-hour set list of covers and originals and songs that Andrew Wood loved, and everything about the show, it was just so alive. And then here we are today in a completely different, you know, circumstance. I can't fucking believe it, man. I give you this is how much I love Soundgarden. I'll give you the history of Soundgarden with me. Because it really is a fucking map in my life of it steered me into a whole different direction in my life. I remember it was 89. I was playing in a band called Ghost Town, and just fucking, just living an insane life, you know, just going for it. And band was looking for a guitar player. We got turned on to a guy named John Butler. Lived in Riverside, played in a band called Roxanne. And, you know, I met him and we hit it off immediately. I drove a Ryder truck from Riverside to the Bay Area with his items. We're total strangers, didn't know each other, and we moved into a house together, just he and I. And I remember it was probably around the first week or so, he started talking about this record had come out. And he's like, yeah, you got to hear this record, man. We got to go get it. We got to go get it, man. And neither of us had money. We were fucking, I mean, we were dead broke, man. This is like 89, living the rock and roll thing. I was working construction. He wasn't working. And we just had no money, you know. But I said, fuck it. We went down to, I think it was Backdoor Records. Or record gallery, one of them, it was a record store, and got a cassette tape called Loud Love, Louder Than Love. It came out on October 5th, but we didn't get it. I didn't get it for like a week because I had to get the paycheck from my job, you know? And so I pick it up, and I remember specifically, went back to the house, we opened it up, and it was October 17th, and the reason I know that, and my memory is pretty foggy here and there because those are some wild years, but the reason I know that was it was the day of the 1989 San Francisco earthquake. We got like a 12-pack of beer. I was going to watch the Giants-A's game. He put on the cassette. We had it cranked up. And as I went into the kitchen to get a beer, the cassette tape was cranking full blast. And all of a sudden, it was just off. And as I started to say, hey, man, why did you turn that off? Before I could get to off, the fucking house just started shaking and cracking and just fucking. And I was like, whoa, what the fuck? Earthquake and major earthquake. But the funny thing about that is that earthquake, man, that record, Louder Than Love, really, it was an earthquake to me, man, because it shook my fucking life. You got to think, 80s, I'm into Aerosmith, AC/DC, Ted Nugent, and Guns N' Roses, of course. Jane's Addiction. You know, that's starting to hit. And then here comes this band that I'd never heard of. And that's the coolest thing about meeting friends, new people and stuff. They share stuff with each other, you know. It's just like, you got to hear this band. And the magnitude of that fucking record when it hit me. And the bond in my friendship with this guy, John Butler, and this new band. It just changed me. I was like, you know, I'm just playing this rock and roll, like, all right, party. And yeah. And then from this record on, it was just like, whoa, this is fucking different, man. These guys are different. They sound like Sabbath, but they're not. They're kind of Zeppelin, but they're not. Singer wears fucking shorts with duct tape and combat boots on stage. Nobody's doing that. I had Kevin Kerslick on. He directed DJ AM's documentary, and I had him on. That's why I was having him on. And as I dug deep down into the guy's work, I realized, holy shit, this guy had filmed Soundgarden's Hands All Over video, which was one of my favorite videos of all time. And he also filmed Motor Vision, their live concert. And as I had Kevin on the couch, I was more interested in Cornell and that era than anything else, because he was a guy that was at ground zero of that. This record, Louder Than Love, it was just monumental. It was strange. You had Hands All Over that was talking about like fucking up the planet. But then you had like full on Kevin's Mom. You're like, what is this band, man? They had some humor, but they were full blown, like just the new sound. Dumb Sex. I mean, that song, it's just crazy. And then Gun with the time changing, the signature time changes of going from fucking super slow to speeding up. Everything changed for me. The whole game, the landscape, man. The landscape of how I thought about music. I was like, wow. Fuck, our shit doesn't matter. Our shit doesn't matter at all. And then it started making me think, do I play music just to party? Or do I play music for the rest of my life for something else, for art? And that might sound cheesy, but man, that's fucking real. I immediately dove deep down into the band and right away was lucky enough to see them. They were coming to San Francisco to the Stone and they were opening for Voivod. And I remember it was only about half full. I was so fucking fired up to see Soundgarden. By then, I had dug deep into them and got Ultra Mega Okay and the EP, which is insane, the Screaming Life FOP EPs. And now I was a full-blown Soundgarden addict. And I was ready to see them, you know? There's no internet. There's no fucking Instagram. There's none of that shit. You got to get a ticket. You got to get in the venue. And here they come. The Black Curtain open. They came out and there they were. Fucking hammering. It was an assault that I never forgot. At one point, Cornell, and I told this story many times, spun the microphone through the cable up into the lighting rig. It spun around. He got on the drum riser and swung out on the mic cable like Tarzan into the fucking crowd. I was like, holy shit. That lighting rig could have easily pulled down and took people out. I was like, I'm fucking in. This band is dangerous, man. This is radical. Right around the same time, my band had an agent named Tom LaPenna. And he worked at an agency called Triad that was later swallowed up by William Morris Agency. Tom LaPenna called me and said, I'm coming to town. We represent a band called Soundgarden. I go, are you fucking kidding me? That's like my favorite band. He goes, I'll be in town. I'm going to the I-Beam. And then when I'm done with that, they're doing a small tour up the coast. You want to come? I said, fuck yeah, I want to come. First stop was at the I-Beam. I remember hitting the I-Beam, Haight Street. Picked up a bottle, small bottle of Jägermeister, ice cold at the liquor store, next, like two shops down from the I-Beam. Pounded that down, went in, and went full ballistic in the pit, stage diving, everything. I was thrown out of this show twice. for stage diving. It was one of the most radical shows I've ever seen. And they were headlining this time, and they were completely on fire. And by now, the word on the street was, fuck everything else, Soundgarden is here. And a lot of people, and I'll tell you what, a lot of people talk Nirvana, and Nirvana being the kings of Seattle, it was never the case in my circle, and in a lot of circles, I think. Soundgarden was the one that kicked the fucking door open. I watched the I-Beam show, and the next day, pretty hungover, rolled up the coast to Santa Barbara. And this is something I only remember barely because it was so insane and so long ago. But they played a frat house in Santa Barbara. It was pretty genius. They had this idea of playing like spots, not at colleges, but like, you know, frat houses and wherever they could to spread the word in the college scene. I showed up at the venue. The venue was a frat house that looked exact to the one on Animal House, one of those big giant craftsmen's. And I went into the living room, and there was probably about 150 people there. Tom LaPenna and I shooting the shit. They're set up in the living room. And I remember just standing about 2 feet away at what was basically a 10-keg frat party and watch Soundgarden destroy this entire fucking frat house with complete, just brute force, man. It was unbelievable to think about right now, to see that show. I can't even tell you how epic that was. Then they carried on, played the whiskey. And then there you go. I'm completely on board. I fall in love with the band. I see him at the Rip party. August 6, 1991. Which, by the way, while this is all happening, another good friend of mine, Stephen Goodrich, who played bass in my band, he and I absolutely fell in love with Soundgarden and Mother Love Bone. And when Andrew Wood passed, we couldn't believe it. And Goodrich emailed me this morning, and he said, I was just thinking about the time we got the Temple of the Dog pre-release cassette in the mail, and we listened to it until it broke. So true. Girl Julie Kennedy, who worked at Rip Magazine, she was a photo editor. She would send us all the music before it was out because Rip Magazine would review it. And we got that Temple of the Dog, and we were fucking, we couldn't believe it. And when we heard that Alice in Chains and Soundgarden were playing the Rip party at the Palladium, we made the truck down. And at the end of the night, we saw something that was so fucking iconic. Eddie Vedder came out and they did Soundgarden. They did Temple of the Dog. And everyone was on stage. And you can watch it on YouTube. And it was a magic fucking night. A magic night. Also, seeing them on the 92 Lollapalooza Soundgarden. Now the machine is in full fucking full mode, and they come out with Bad Motor Finger, which, by the way, my other buddy Casey Chaos had a pre-release of Bad Motor Finger, and we were in his car, and he goes, you want to hear the new Soundgarden? And he put it on, and Jesus Christ Pose came on, and I couldn't fucking believe what I was hearing. 1992. Lollapalooza. Pearl Jam, Jesus Mary Chain, Soundgarden, Ice Cube, Ministry, Red Hot Chili Peppers. one of the greatest Lollapaloozas ever. Side stage, Rage Against the Machine. Cypress Hill, House of Pain. Come on, man. This era of music, what was happening? It was unbelievable what was happening. Alice in Chains, Nirvana, Soundgarden. All of that. The movie Singles is in full force. The band's everywhere. I just cannot get over it. You look at these tunes on Bad Motor Finger. Nobody was writing songs like this. It was just like, what was this? Was it Zeppelin? Was it, you know? No, it was themselves. Searching with My Good Eye Closed. I'm talking deep tracks, man. The amount of material this guy wrote. The lyrics were just incredible. Face Pollution, Outshined, Rusty Cage. This thing is a masterpiece. Room 1,000 Years Wide. I saw Soundgarden many times. Not once did they ever let me down. I mean, Cornell, it's just, you just never could take anything for granted, man. It just floors me. In 1994 is really where they kind of get absolutely monstrous huge, which, by the way, you gotta think about how great this band was too. Kim Thayil, Matt Cameron, Ben Shepherd. These guys just laying down these landscapes for Cornell's vision, man. Cornell was an absolute artist, and you know, you gotta think about all the loss around him. I don't know how you deal with that early on as roommate Andrew Wood. And then, you know, of course, Lane Staley, Kurt Cobain. It's just on and on and on. You know, all those great artists all have one thing in common. Super dark, dark music. And you can't just write that if you're feeling good. You know, that shit's real and it comes from someplace. Black Hole Sun, man, if you listen to that song, it feels like a dark, dark day in Seattle. I don't even know what to say, man. But, you know, to say the guy changed my life is an understatement. It is an understatement. And, you know, he's definitely top five vocalist of all time for me. And just a life and game changer. And he led me down the right road into exploring different way of looking at music, man. Different way of playing music, different way of looking, different way of sounding, everything about him. The album covers, the titles, the lyrics, the guitars, man. He was one of the early guys to play one of those badass Les Paul Silverbursts. Him and Adam from Tool. He played Les Pauls. He fucking rocked. The guy, and then he could also just bust out a Prince cover on you, which, you know, another way of relating to him, I was like, God, this guy just loves everything, you know? It's just crazy. I can't even believe it, you know? As I'm off to rock on the range, they're supposed to be headlining tomorrow. It's like, I don't even want to go, you know? Like, it's just going to feel horrible out there, man. But on the same thing, I want to be out there. I want to be out there with, you know, a celebration. Celebration of Chris Cornell. And that's what everybody else should be doing. Celebrating him today. We've got tons of great music. Tons of footage. All over YouTube. You can watch hours of this man. And, man. I feel horrible for the band guys, man. I just can't imagine your brother's gone. Anyway. Everybody. Turn on a Soundgarden record and play it loud today, man. I love you, Chris Cornell, and I still cannot believe you're gone.